So we're up to the Mamari Chazal on page 866. We're on Perek Aleph Pasuk Vav and Zayin. Okay, Perek Vav and Zayin, and we have just left to do over here the Mamari Chazal. Bein Yichabedav the Eved Adonav. And so on the very bottom it says, My Bal Adon Ben Bal Adon. Okay, who is Bal Adon Ben Bal Adon? Who is Bal Adon? The Guf Hanetzar?
No, I don't think it's connected to the Guf Hanetzar.
So I forgot all about this. Totally forgot. Who is Bal Adon Ben Aldon?
Isn't that earlier?
Good.
Huh? My is Pasek. My Bal Adon Ben Bal Adon.
Not Bal Adon.
Let's go look it up. Malachim. Right? It's Malachim. It's Bal Adon Ben Bal Adon. It's the Pasuk Malachim. Bal Adon.
It's earlier on.
Yeah, I'm looking up.
With Rav Shakei and all that, isn't that?
The Melech Ashur. Melech Ashur. Okay, but Esaihi at that time shalach bredach baladan belabdan belach bavel sfarim umincha el chizkiyahu ki shama ki cholach chizkiyahu. Okay, this is the time of chizkiyahu. It's Yeshaya, during the time of Yeshaya when chizkiyahu when Yeshayahu was very very sick and Sancheriv, he was about to lay siege to Yerushalayim. So let's see over here. So Yiko Yeshayahu el Hanavi Hashem vayoshev ha'esatzel. Okay, b'malis asher yarda b'malis. Okay, I think it was the Nebuchadnezzar's father, I think. B'weisahi shalach b'roidach b'roidach baladon ben baladon melech bavel sefarim u'mincha el chizkiyo ki shama ki cholo chizkiyahu. Okay, there was a miracle where the time went back.
Right.
Time went back and the whole world heard about this incredible miracle.
Right.
Including Nebuchadnezzar. This was the beginning of the story, the rise of the king of Nebuchadnezzar. At this time, the dominant power in this world was Ashur. So here we read what Rashi says: Ki shama ki chola v'ad ois hayom lo hoy adam chola v'choya. Okay, this goes to Rashi in some Amori Chazal. It was an amazing thing that he survived, that he recovered, and. The Mitzudos, you're going to die because he did not marry. He did not marry. So over here it says, I think it's Nebuchadnezzar, right? This is another name for Nebuchadnezzar. Roy Shateda ki aval pi, she aval pi. This is from the Ralbag. Even though Sancheriv ruled over Bavel, Nimshcha hamaluch lemalchei Ashur ad shabon Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel v'hichzik b'malchus hazeh v'nimshcha hamalchus loy l'benoy l'ben b'noy ad shivim shana. So this person, Bal Adon ben Bal Adon, was either Nebuchadnezzar's father or some predecessor. If I'm not mistaken, I think there's a chazal that says Bal Adon ben Bal Adon is actually Nebuchadnezzar himself. He has many names. But this was the very, very beginning of the seed of the rise of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, in fact, Chazal tell us the reason why Nebuchadnezzar, why they were granted success, is because he actually had derech eretz
right.
To inquire after the welfare of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyo was a
he was sending a messenger with a get well card, and then he pulled it back and took a few steps
because he did not write it properly. The Hashem was not written. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's either Nebuchadnezzar himself, which is a little bit strange because that would make Nebuchadnezzar like an outrageous would have lived an outrageous number of years. He would have ended up living like 400 years, because this story of Sancheriv took place about 130 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Agolos of the Aseres HaShvatim took place 130 years before the Churban. So if when it says here in this post that Baladan ben Baladan is Nebuchadnezzar, he is sending a get well card, as Rav Michal said, to Chizkiyahu. And during the time of Chizkiyahu was the era of when the Aseres HaShvatim went into Galus, and Nebuchadnezzar did ultimately conquer and destroy the Beis HaMikdash 130 years later. So that would make Nebuchadnezzar an outrageous, have a lifespan of, at least 200 years, which is something which is hard to accept. So then it would either mean that it was his father, or it was his grandfather, it was part of the family. Mary Hat?
Walked.
You walked, okay. So you're still cooling off, okay.
How's
it's okay, you called me last night. So Baruch Shabbat, he had a Heshi Bart had the surgery. It seems like he did okay. Surgery was okay, and he's awake. He's a little bit of pain, as to be expected, but hopefully he'll be okay.
Was that the surgery?
Yeah, it was something. Okay, so let's go back to the Bamarei Chazal, page 866. Ben Yechavel Ben Yechavel of Ma Baladon Ben Maladon. What does this mean over here? So Amri, they said, the Chazal is over here, page 866 on the bottom. Bal Adon Malkahava, he was the king. The Ishtani Ape, the Havaki Ki the Kalba. And he looked like a dog. That's what it says here in this Chazal, that Bal Adon, he had the appearance of a dog. Hava Yosef Berei Al Malchuse, and his son was sitting on his throne, or ruling his malchus, kiha the kosav igeres, when he wrote the letter to Chizkiyahu, a get well card, as Rav Michal said, to Chizkiyahu, have a kosav shmei ushmei davua, so he wrote his own name and the name of his father, Baladon Malka, hainu dechsev
Baladon
ben Baladon, so it's like junior, yeah. it's like John Junior. So you want to
say sounds like a royal name anyway, so it's probably like the second.
You take the same name as your father, so therefore he wrote Baladon ben Balus. The one who wrote this letter, it says of him, was his son. So that means then the son of Baladon. They both have the same name. So I guess, you know, in those times it was very popular to name your child, give your child your own name.
We once learned that these kings used titles that had their god in the title, or one of them.
Right, you want to write El.
So this is Baal.
Excellent.
Adon is like
excellent. Baal Adon is Baal. The word Baal is in the name itself. Excellent. They put the name of the Avodah Zarah.
Baal, whichever.
Baal, Tzafoin. Baal was in Avodah Zarah. They put the name of the Avodah Zarah. Look, we have it also by us. We have in
Baal Shatzar.
In which parshas? In Korach, when you have all in Korach, or is in Balak? We have all the names of the mishpachas, the mishpachas of Klal Yisrael. So they all begin with a yud or a hey, liachtze eli. They all end with a
almost all.
Anyway, there's a hey in the beginning and a yud at the end.
Right.
The letters of Hashem. Only one exception that we do not have. There's because the name already has a hey at the end, a yud liyimna. Liyimna is a yud in the beginning, a hey at the end, so it already has the yud and the hey. But everyone else that does not have a hey and the yud surrounding the name, so the pasuk describes it, writes it with liyacht se'eli, for example. We'll put a
liyacht se'eli.
Liyacht se'eli. So you put at the end the yud. Hayacht se'eli. We put a yud at the end. I don't remember that, but the Rashi there says we append the letters yud and hey to the name in order to say edus that no one in the family is illegitimate, even though they lived in Egypt for 210 years. and the Egyptians had complete control over their bodies. Nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected them, and there was no act of adultery or anything of the like, which would bring about an illegitimate member of Klal Yisrael. It was an edus from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that everyone in Klal Yisrael is a meyuchas. So here we have this person, so he's saying a very good idea. Over here, they put over here in their own goyim, they put in their own names, they put Bel or Baal, they would attach the name of the Avodah Zarah.
Nebu is another one.
All different types of Avodah Zarah, they would attach to the name. So here we have here the son. The son of his name was Baladon. And you're saying the reason why he's called Baladon was Bel, that was the name of Avodah Zarah. And he had a son. And his son, when he wrote the letter, in his name, the son of his father. In other words, he had derech eretz, a goy. A goy had derech eretz to mention his father in the letter. Ordinarily, you think about a goy couldn't care less about his father. I'm now the king. Who cares about my father? Why would I bother to give honor to my father by mentioning my father's name in the letter? That's not what it says. It says over here that he did have derech eretz. It says over here, v'shtani pabi v'hav yaseh b'real malchus. So here again, the second line on the bottom of the page, that the son was in charge. He had the kosef igeres when he wrote a letter. Had the kosef he wrote shmei his name was shmei davua, bal adon malka, haynu dechsev. This is the reason why we're bringing down this pasuk. We're coming to connect it to what it says over here in pasuk vav. Bein yechabed of even a goy, even Nebuchadnezzar, or even the ancestors of Nebuchadnezzar, they had basic derech eretz for their parents. Baladon ben Baladon. Haynu dechsev bein yechabed of the eved adoinav. Bein yechabed of. Where do you find over here this idea that a bein is yechabed of their father? Hoda amoron. Like we just said, this that we just said, Baladon ben Baladon, the eved adoinav, an eved his master. Where do we find a source for that? Uvachodesh achamishi be'asol achodesh. The fifth month, this is Asar B'Teves, Hushnas Tesha Esrei Shana LeMelech Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, Bo Nivuzar Adon, Rav Tabachim, the chief executioner, Omar Lefnei Melech Bavel B'Yerushalayim, he stood before the king of Bavel in Yerushalayim, Yishref Espes Hashem, Yespes HaMelech, Mi Solek Nebuchadnezzar, now what's the question over here? Umi Solek Nebuchadnezzar L'Yerushalayim? Can it be that Nebuchadnezzar really came to Yerushalayim? You see what it says in the passage, Vayalu Oisai El Melech Babel Rivlosa. Nebuchadnezzar was not in Yerushalayim. Question over here is, Nebuzaradon is the one who came to, it says here that he was Omad. Nebuzaradon, the Zerab HaTabo, Omad Lefnei Melech Babel Yerushalayim. So this seems to indicate that Nebuchadnezzar, he was the king, and he had a general. The general was Nebuzaradon. And where did Nebuzaradon, where was he located? He was located in Yerushalayim, standing right in front of Nebuchadnezzar. So the simple translation of this passage indicates that Nebuchadnezzar was also in Yerushalayim. If Nebuzaradon is described here as being Oymed, standing before Nebuchadnezzar in Yerushalayim, they're both there. That's what it says over here. Amad lefnei melech bavel b'shalayim. And he went, and it goes on to say, Vayishref es beis Hashem, yes beis HaMelech. He went and he burned the beis HaMikdash. And the beis HaMikdash, this is the fifth one. Not this is not what I told you. I told Asar B'Tavis, that's a total mistake. This is Tisha B'Av. Isn't amazing? Yom V'Yoyma. Uvachodesh HaChamishi, this is Tisha B'Av, on the 10th day of the month. This is Mamish Tisha. I made a mistake. When I saw the number 10, I thought it was referring to the 10th month. That's a Tohos. When it says over here, number 10 is the 10th day of the month. And the 5th month, that is the 10th day of Tisha B'Av. Why do we observe Tisha B'Av on the 9th day? Why? Because that's the Gemara. There's Machloikas Numa Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the one who compiled all the Mishnayos. He said that it was up to me, Tisha B'Av will be observed not on the 9th day, but on the 10th day. Why? Because of this pasuk. This pasuk says that the Beis HaMikdash was burned on the 10th day, not on the 9th day. So why then do we observe Tisha B'Av on the 9th day? So the Gemara says, Aschalta de Poronusa. That's when the Mikdash began, the beginning took place. When did the Mikdash, was it ignited? When we get up. The moment when we get up from sitting on the floor, that's the moment when they lit the match. And isn't it amazing? That's when we get up from the intensity of the Avelos. And according to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, we should really begin, that's when Tisha B'Av should really begin. That's when it should be called Erev Tisha B'Av, and we should have the Suda HaMafsekes, and the burning, the most intense moment is on the 10th day. However, the Chachamim prevailed, and we observed Tisha B'Av on the 9th because of the principle of Aschalta de Paranusa. The beginning of the Paranus is the most significant portion. We always discuss this. This is why many people know that if there would have been a day to commemorate the Holocaust, what would be an appropriate day? So Rabbi J.J. Shach told him yesterday, he got one term, gave a very lengthy shiur about this. And he said it's pasha to him that if we would have a day to commemorate the Holocaust, it should be Kristallnacht. Because Kristallnacht is considered by most historians to be the haschala. I mean, there are many events. Obviously, there are many events that lead up to what happened, but it's considered to be an very significant event which really started the whole thing. And he says, Pasha, that would be a very ideal time to have a day, a Yom HaZikaron, for the Churban. It's not during Chodesh Nisan. It's not a conflict. It's in November, I believe, right? It's in November.
Yeah.
There's no conflict with any of the Moadim, with any time when you're not allowed to have Avelus, and it's considered by the Hamoin Am to be the Aschalta de Paranusa. And the Gemara says Beferish that when we commemorate Churban, we focus on the beginning. Others will tell you that another time is the voyage of the St. Louis. The voyage of the St. Louis is another candidate for the Aschalta de Paranusa. Okay, the Warsaw Uprising, it's very interesting. There's definitely an enormous amount of machshava that one can delve into as to the significance of the Warsaw Uprising. And that's what the Medina, the State of Israel, is a product of the Holocaust. And if you study Israeli history, that's a glaring fact that stands out like front and center. Medinas Yisrael is by and large a product of the Holocaust, and it's interesting, and it makes a lot of sense. What they did is that the whole Medina is this attitude of never again, which, okay, that's a hashkafa that many Gedolei Yisrael are not very happy with, that hashkafa of saying never again. But it makes, I mean, in their hashkafa of what the Medinas Yisrael, how it was established, and the purpose that it should never ever happen something like this. Listen, there's a lot of Yiddish hashkaf in that as well. You have to do your hishtadlus. The Warsaw Uprising, that is like the perfect thing that really captures what the purpose, what the frame of mind of those who established the state, what was going through their mind. It's perfect. It's actually a perfect day. Only problem is, it's in the middle of Chodesh Nisan. That's number one. And number two, many of the Gedolei Yisrael were not of that approach of where everyone agrees. You have to be a fool not to say that you don't do your hishtadlus. Who's not going to say? But to give it the ikar focus of Koichi V'Oitzem Yadi, it's something which many of the Gedolei Yisrael found very troubling. And it's a more balanced, nuanced approach to you have to do your hishtadlus, you have to do the best of the best, have the best weapons, go to the best doctors, best education in life, you have to go for the best. Yet, you have to also acknowledge that everything is biyad Hashem. So when it comes to commemoration, many Gedolei Yisrael were not pleased with the Yom HaShoah for two reasons. Number one, halachically, it's not a time that according to Shulchan Aruch, we are permitted to observe Avelus. That's number one, because the anniversary of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto is in the middle of Chodesh Nisan. And number two, it's not something that many people felt should be the focus. The focus, of course, you have to do your hishtadlus, but the focus should be to commemorate that Hashem runs the world. And by J.J. Schachter, he was a very, very powerful drasha. It was a very long drasha, a very powerful drasha. It was actually on Kristallnacht, the anniversary of Kristallnacht, a couple of years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. It was an amazing, you probably can get the drasha probably online and whyutorah.org. I'm sure it's available over there. He gave a very powerful address at some event commemorating the anniversary of Kristallnacht. And he made this very powerful idea that this really should be the Yom HaZikaron, if it would be, whatever the reason is, I don't know why, if they would be, or they really, maybe just it is, whatever, to commemorate, to remember the Holocaust. Over here, this piece of Gemara that we just read over here on the bottom is the cornerstone of the drasha of Rabbi J.J. Schachter. The Gemara says that when, it's clear as day, when did the Beis HaMikdash did it burn down? It burned down on the 10th day of Chodesh Av. When did they light the match? Was on Chatzos Hayoim, the same moment on Tisha B'Av, when we get up from the floor and we sit down on a regular chair, was the moment when the fire in the Beis HaMikdash began. That's the, so it's shocking. We're getting up from Avelos when the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed. So everyone will tell you, all of the Darshanim will tell you, that's because Mizmar Le'asaf, Dama Ben Nesina, when the Ma'aseh day with Dama Ben Nesina, that's a different story, I'm getting confused, maybe, but Mizmar Le'asaf, I forgot the whole story already, but there was one of the Amorayim. What? He came, right? It should be Kina Le'asaf Mibayle. Who was the story with? I forgot the whole story, right? But Asaf, there was a person that was being mechabed his father. He was busy being mechabed his father. Interesting, Ben Yechabed Af, same pasuk. He was busy there waiting for his father. His father fell asleep, and he was standing there and waiting to serve his father. And he had an incredible day. And while he was waiting for his father, it occurred to him the pshat in the pasuk. Mizmar le'asaf, bohu goyim benachal osecha. The goyim have entered into your inheritance, and the mizmar goes on to describe the korban. And the question is, why does it say mizmar le'asaf? It should say kina le'asaf. It's not a song that the goyim came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and it occurred to him at that moment, it is a song, because if Hashem would not have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he would have had to have destroyed us. Hashem poured out his anger on stone and wood, instead of pouring out his anger upon us. And that's why we have still the basis. So therefore, indeed, it is a mizmar. And that is the moment when we get up from Shiva. The moment when the Beis HaMikdash was ignited is the moment when we acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had racham upon us. He did not pour out his anger upon us. He poured out the anger upon the Beis HaMikdash. And we survived. Not every individual. Obviously, the Bayashem Nevuzaradan, he killed 900, it says in the Pasuk, 940,000 people were murdered alone just for the blood of Zechariah ben Yehoyada. 250 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, there was a Navi, Zechariah ben Yehoyada, not to be confused with Zechariah ben Berechia, that we just spent a couple of months learning Zechariah ben Berechia. There was a Navi going back 250 years before that. His name was Zechariah ben Yehoyada. He was in the Beis HaMikdash. It was Yom Kippur. And it was a Shabbos Yom Kippur. And the people put in the Melech Yoyosh, put in the Beis HaMikdash an Avodah Zarah. And he was giving Musar. How dare you put an Avodah Zarah here in the Beis HaMikdash? And the people were annoyed with his preaching. So they asked permission from the king, Melech Yoyosh, if we can kill him, if we can execute him. And the Melech says yes, he signed off, and they went into the Mikdash, and they threw stones at him, and they killed him in cold blood. This was in Koyin Vinavi. This was a chait that we would never forgive him for. And he was a Navi, he was a Koyin, he was Shabbos, Yom Kippur, he was giving Musar. How dare you kill such a person? How dare the silent majority tolerate such behavior? His blood was bubbling on the spot where he was murdered, and no matter what they would do, they could not remove the blood and they could not stop the blood from bubbling.
And this went on for, can you imagine, for 250 years. For 250 years, continuously blood was bubbling on the spot in the Beis HaMikdash where he was murdered. Enters Nebuzaradan at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, and he surveys the Beis HaMikdash, and he sees this unusual, miraculous sight of bubbling blood. And he asks the people, what is this
all
about?
First Beis HaMikdash.
I'm sorry, you are correct. The first Beis HaMikdash. Absolutely. What am I saying? Right. First Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar comes, Nebuzaradan comes, and he sees this blood bubbling, and he asks, what is this all about? And they told him, oh, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's just, it's the blood of an animal. They shechted once an animal, and something unusual. They were doing some probably experiments. And the blood of the animal is bubbling. Just, you know, we were trying to make a vaccine, and this is what happened over here. It's nothing, nothing, nothing to be worried about. Really? Bring out the files. Bring out all, you know, let me interview the head of the CDC. Let me interview all of the head of the departments of the government to see what exactly is going on. And he made a thorough forensic audit of what's taking place. And he discovered corruption. He discovered that this was the blood of the Navi Zechariah ben Yehoyada HaKoyein that was killed on Shabbos Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash for giving Musar. So he says to the blood, Zechariah, don't worry, I will avenge your blood. And he had brought to that spot Talmidei Chachamim, and he murdered them on that spot. And the blood of the Talmidei Chachamim mingled with the blood of Zechariah. Nothing happened. And then he brought out more Talmidei Chachamim and more and more and more. And then he brought out the children. He brought out the children. And at the end of the day, he already killed, says in the Pasuk, 940,000 of Klal Yisrael. He then said to the blood, to Zechariah's blood, I have already killed the best. Do you want me to continue and kill them all? And at that moment, the blood stopped bubbling. So 940,000 people died 250 years later on that spot by Nebuzaradan to avenge the blood of Zechariah ben Yehoyada.
Was it only men that he killed?
Doesn't give us the gory details. I don't know, but this is one of the most popular stories of Tisha B'Av.
Then he became a...
Oh, you're right. And then Nebuzaradan, correct, how could I forget? And then Nebuzaradan, he made a Kal V'Chomer, and he said to himself, if this is what happens because of the murder of one person, that it had to come about, such a tragedy, that he did himself, Nebuzaradan, of 940,000 people to avenge the blood of one person, he said, what's going to be with me? I murdered a lot more than one person. He just murdered all these people, plus probably a lot more. So he ran away and became a ger. I don't know what became of him. Doesn't say that who came from him.
Was
I don't know.
No,
Nero.
Why couldn't he think of this before he murdered them?
Good question. I don't know. That's life. We always only in life.
Exactly.
In life, we always
that's
only
right.
Appreciate things when we no longer have it. When it's too late. That's the sad story of life. But he ran away, and what came from him, I do not know. When you mentioned Rabbi Meir, Neron was the Kesar. Neron was not necessarily the Kesar. Was he the Kesar? Neron? It could be. He was the Kesar. He came actually to conquer.
It doesn't seem likely that the Nero that we're familiar with was this Nero.
There's a lot been written on it. There's a lot of articles, a lot of very interesting things about exactly who was Nero, to dig up the records of the Roman Empire. But there is such a person in the empire that was a Caesar for a short period of time and disappeared, and no one talks about it. And I think that they actually want, the Jewish historians want to suggest that is Nero. Nero was a Caesar. He came to Jerusalem to conquer Jerusalem, and he shot arrows in different directions. And in every direction that he shot the arrow miraculously turned and made its way to Jerusalem. And he asked the child the Pasuk, and after everything was said and done, it was clear as day to him that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him very much to conquer Jerusalem. He then said to himself, what's this? Hashem wants me to do his dirty work. He wants to wipe his hands on me. Hashem wants to destroy his city, and he's going to wipe his hands on me. I'm not interested. I am not interested in being the messenger for tragedy for Klal Yisrael. He ran away, he disappeared, and Chazal said he was Megayer, and from him came the holy Rebbe Meir. Stam Mishnah is Rebbe Meir. It's an amazing thing. You see, there are people, Nero, the fact that he was the Caesar, obviously shows he had tremendous talent, tremendous power, Kodesh HaNefesh. To be a Caesar wasn't like, you know, today in America, to be the President of the United States. You don't have to necessarily be the sharpest and the brightest and the most mighty. Not every politician is, who would want to be a politician tomorrow? You gotta be realistic. Who would want to be a politician today? Does any normal person want to be a politician? See what goes on? It doesn't necessarily attract the brightest, the best, the most talented. In the Roman Empire, it did. In the Roman Empire, it obviously attracted people that were very talented, very mighty, very powerful, very successful. And the proof is, if Nero was the Caesar, and Nero reached the conclusion that Hashem is using me to bring harm to his people, and my end is not going to be good, and he then converted and became the holy Rebbe Meir, we learn his words every single day, it goes to show he wasn't a simple person. He was obviously a very, very mighty, powerful person that had tremendous kachas nefesh before he converted. In any event, this is this Mamre Chazal. We have over here this pasuk that says explicitly that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the fifth month, on the 10th day, and the Rabbanon and Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it was his opinion that we should observe the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash not on Tisha B'Av, but on the 10th day of Av. Why then do we observe it on the 9th day of Av? Because he was outnumbered in Beis Din by the Chachamim, who said we should observe it on the day when the Beis HaMikdash began to be destroyed, which was the 9th, because of the principle of Aschalto de Poronusa, the beginning of punishment. The moment of Haschalah is the most significant moment to focus on when reflecting and observing mourning for Klal Yisrael. The Aschalto de Poronusa, which is on Tisha B'Av. And likewise, we just finished explaining that by extension, if you want to talk about the Holocaust, So the Holocaust, a very significant time to focus on the Holocaust would be Kristallnacht, or even to commemorate the voyage of the St. Louis, which many historians is viewed to be a watershed moment in the beginning of the Holocaust. And likewise, Asar B'Teves. Why is Asar B'Teves a very severe tinus? Ad kedei kach that if theoretically it would fall out on Shabbos, we would observe Asar B'Teves even on fast, even on Shabbos, because that is also in reference to the Chum by Beis HaMikdash, that is the Aschalto de Poronusa. That is the beginning of the process, the siege. The siege of Yerushalayim was the first part of a four-step process of Churban, the siege, the breaking through of the walls, the Churban Abayis, and the Churban of the She'eris HaPleita, with the assassination of Gedalia ben Achikam by Yishmael. Okay, now let's go continue. Now, why are we bringing this Mamre Chazal over here in this case? So it says over here, because we have a question over here, and why does it say over here, Nebuzarada, Nebuzarada, Amal Lufnei Melech Ba'al Yishalayim, Ba'yishav Esbez Hashem, Esbez HaMelech. So the question over here is, I'm over here, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down on the last words of the line, Umi Solik Nebuchadnezzar Li Yerushalayim. It says in the pasuk, "Vayalu oisoy el melech Babel riv losa." Nebuchadnezzar never went to Yerushalayim. He stationed himself in a city or a location called Riv Losa, which was at a distance from Yerushalayim. And the Medrash tells us why. It says when Sancheriv came to conquer Yerushalayim, he came with 800,000 soldiers. And some said that 800,000 generals, and each general had a battalion, which means the number of soldiers that arrived to conquer Yerushalayim was astronomical. Whatever it may be, the lowest estimate is 800,000 people. That's a lot of people to surround Yerushalayim. They were all in place, Lel Pesach. the night of Pesach, when Klal Yisrael was busy eating the Seder, eating the Matzah, and the Mor, and the Korban Pesach, everyone was celebrating Pesach. And outside Yerushalayim were 800,000 soldiers at least, led by Sanhedrin, the king of Ashur. And really, the Chazal said he really wanted to conquer Yerushalayim the day before, on Erev Pesach, when Klal Yisrael was busy eating their macaroons and their oranges for the seal of the Tanis Mecheres. What would be a better time to conquer when everyone is sitting in shul eating macaroons for the seal of Mecheres? Someone sent me a picture yesterday, showing me a picture of the difference between a seal Erev Pesach and a seal during the 9 days. A seal during the 9 days, what do you serve? Steak, French fries. You serve hot dogs, barbecue. A seal during the 9 days, there's no limit to what you serve. Kesuda shloima b'shaita. What do you serve at a seal Erev Pesach? Macaroons. Excuse me, Erev Pesach. This is, Yitzias Mitzrayim. Mitzayischem Mitzrayim. We're now going to go Tavdunes and Lokim alohor hazeh. You would think Erev Pesach, you should have a nice, delicious seam of steak. No, macaroons. 9 days? It's the Churban. The Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Golas HaShechina. Steak? What's going on with us? We're funny people, no?
Yeah.
Try to explain this to a non-Jew. Try to explain that we have two siyumim during the 9 days and Erev Pesach. During the 9 days, steak, Erev Pesach is macaroons. Try to explain that to someone who's not part of our chem. Good luck. In any event, Nora Michal, you don't.
No, you're right. You know, yeah,
we're a strange breed. What? Okay, I know a lot of good answers. I know. We have all the answers. We know all the answers.
There has been something with the merit, maybe with. With Pesach, that the whole army was destroyed.
It says in the Medrash that the entire the night of the Seder, miraculously, every single soldier of Sanhedrin died suddenly in the middle of the night. They died. What happened to their bodies? Who knows? What happened to their bodies? 800,000 bodies. Where did they all go? All those bodies? I don't know. They all died in the middle of the night, except it says a handful. A mispar. It says
to
in the pasuk.
To tell what happened.
It says in the pasuk like a five. You count them on your hands. That's probably where the expression comes from. You can count them on your fingers. A few people survived. The king of Sanhedrin survived, and one of the people that survived, Chazal said this in Medrash, which it's hard to reconcile because how long did Nebuchadnezzar live then? Nebuchadnezzar survived. He was a soldier. He was one of his soldiers. He was one of, I think, the five people that survived this event on the Lel Pesach when they besieged Yerushalayim.
They took such midgets for soldiers? A midget.
I don't know the answer. Maybe they needed. Maybe they needed someone like, you know, if you want to be an Air Force pilot, if you want to fly an F-35, you have to be short. You know, you can't be. You think that if you want to be a soldier, you have to be 6'3" to be a soldier, right? You work for the NBA. You got to be at least 6'3". They won't even look at you if you're not 6'3" in the NBA. So to be a soldier, you want to be strong, macho. No, if you want to fly, you want to fly for Israel, a jet, an F-35. I think you have to be very short. You have to be like 5'6", 5'7". You have to be very sure because that's just the way it is. They need a certain body size to fit into the plane.
That's why the girls can get behind.
The girls, they fit into the plane better. And so in Echnami, there could be needs on the battlefield for people that are midgets. Everyone has a purpose in this world. Maybe in Echnami, you need specifically the Dafka, someone very small for a certain purpose. What? He's quoting a Medrash.
Wasn't it Harai who was a midget?
Also,
great,
whatever it is, but in any event, whatever the story is, Nebuchadnezzar, it says in the Medrash, Nebuchadnezzar survived. Nebuchadnezzar, he saw with his own eyes the miracle, 800,000 people dead.
Okay.
And he was traumatized, and all the king's psychologists and all the king's psychiatrists couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. He was traumatized from this experience, witnessing what he saw, and he was terrified to go anywhere near Yerushalayim. He could not live the experience. You know, in psychologists, that's what you always hear about. They said
PTSD.
They take people who are traumatized back to the crime scene, and they relive it with them, and they heal them. Okay, that's a technique in psychology. Person that had a traumatic experience in a certain location, you go back to the place, you prepare them, and you re-experience and you heal them by returning to the location. Obviously, Nebuchadnezzar was damaged to the degree where this technique did not work or would not work. And he refused to go back to Jerusalem, anywhere near Jerusalem, because of his memory as a child. Now, it's a little bit strange, but Michal just pointed out that would have to mean that Nebuchadnezzar now was at least 130 years old, which is bizarre. Okay? It's bizarre to say such that he was 130 to 100. Not impossible. We seem to know that there were people.
You don't have to take that.
Right, so you can take it as his father. So you can say that his father, every when he went to bed, his bedtime stories. So his father told him what happened, or his grandfather. It could be that he had a Messiah in the Mishpacha. The Zayde, when he came to Yerushalayim, had bad luck. He had bad luck, it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. I don't want to take any risks. So if it's not Nebuchadnezzar himself, maybe it was his son, his grandson. These are all part of this class of Midrashim, which, do you take them literally? Is it a descendant? V'chulu v'chulu. In any event, Nebuchadnezzar, the Midrash says, refused to go anywhere near Yerushalayim because of the trauma of what happened 130 years ago, where Sancheiriv and his men, 800,000 of his men at least, they died in the middle of the night, Lel Pesach. So what did he do? He went to Rivla. Rivla was the closest hotel, the closest place where he can set up shop without going into Yerushalayim. He can be in the vicinity and he can receive reports. Maybe he can even view, perhaps he was able even to see Yerushalayim from the distance, from the roof. But Rivla is where he stayed. This is where he settled when his army was busy conquering Yerushalayim. So here we have a contradiction in the Pasuk. And one in the Pasuk says explicitly that Nebuchadnezzar never went to Yerushalayim. And the Medrash elaborates because he was terrified. Instead, he went to Rivla. On the other hand, it says here in the Pasuk that his general, his top general, Nevuzaradan, the Rav HaTabochin, he stood in Yerushalayim before Nebuchadnezzar, which literally means he is in Yerushalayim and Nebuchadnezzar is in Yerushalayim and they're standing one in front of the other. So how do we reconcile this contradiction? Where exactly is Nebuchadnezzar located? So this is the question that Chazal asks, and the Gemara answers, V'yachsiv ayalu oysu el melech babel Rivlasa. Nebuchadnezzar only went to Rivlasa. Where is Rivlasa? The Omar Rebbe Avahu, Zu, and
Rivla.
Rivla, sorry, what did I say? You said
Rivlasa, that's two Rivla.
Two Rivla, right, the hay at the end. Two Rivla, fine. Two Rivla. The Omar Rebbe Avahu, Zo, Antochia. Okay, Antochia. Where is Antochia located? Turkey?
Antioch.
It's in the bottom of Turkey.
Syria or Turkey?
Yeah, okay, somewhere Turkey. Over there, so that's not so far away. That's in the vicinity. I like that hat.
Like 35 years old,
man. It's from your
Bar Mitzvah? Antioch. Now we know it's the summer. If the rabbi is wearing a white straw hat, we know the summer has arrived. I hope you don't mind that. My father also had a straw hat. He almost never wore them.
I have a dog one, but
it's good. It looks nice. It matches your shirt. You have some style there.
Thank you so much.
So the Gemara gives an answer. Rav Chista Rav Yitzchak bar Avudimi Charama. One says the most yoiknoi hoisa chakuku loy al mer kaftoi shal nevuzaradan v'hoi yedem loy kimi kimoy shemalkoi lifanov. Answer number one, gedolim pictures. They had gedolim pictures. Nevuzaradan had a picture, the image of Nebuchadnezzar etched into his chariot. They only have gedolim pictures. They also have gedolim pictures. Nebuzaradan put the image of Nebuchadnezzar in his chariot in order to always have in front of him the aim of the year of his master. An incredible piece of Gemara. That's really, when I say gedolim, it's not a joke. It's coming to attach the pasuk. The pasuk says that Nebuzaradan, he stood before Nebuchadnezzar, the Melech Bavel. What do you mean? Melech Bavel never came near this place. There was the image, a picture. Okay, you know, they had image, a portrait was etched into his chariot. That qualifies as if he's mamush standing before him. The aim on the yira, when you see your master right in front of you, even though it's not him physically, it's just his image, that is enough to put you in the proper frame of mind to behave in a certain way. Incredible. That's answer number one. The Chachamim one says, "Emo yisero chayslo b'menu v'doyme kimisha oimei lifanav." You don't need a picture; just the impression, the demus tiyuknoy of this master was so powerful it stood in front of him. Now, this is an incredible, incredible Chazan.
It would have been just poetic that he stood before. He represented him, and he stood before him.
I hear what you say, but the fact that the Gemara, the terminology is a bit too strong for that. If you would say that he represented him. I hear what you're saying, but it would appear that the Gemara, there would have been a language that would have been similar, but not as potent. The potency of he stood before him implies it's not just representing him. It's actually he is there. What do you mean he is there? Mm-hmm. And before we go explain, we'll go back to the Maimon Chazal, I'm just going to get clarity on why we're bringing this down. This is the example of the Eved Adonav. Here we learn over here in the pasuk. The pasuk over here, we have over here pasuk vav. Bein yichabed of number one, number two, ve'eved adonav. What does it mean bein yichabed of? So the Gemara told Nebuchadnezzar, his son, Baladon ben Baladon. Who's Baladon ben Baladon? It's either Nebuchadnezzar himself, or it's Nebuchadnezzar's father, or his grandfather. And the next one, the top of that, was also Baladon. There was the king before Nebuchadnezzar had this name recognition. As we all know, Nebuchadnezzar, his predecessor, or maybe he in the previous era in his life, was called Baladon. And when he wrote a get well card to Chizkiyahu, he wrote, "My name is Baladon ben Baladon." That's unprecedented in ancient times. For a guy to give cover to his father, for a king to give cover to his father, you know, like George W. I'm George W., the son of George. George Ben George. What's his father? What do they call his father? George Sr.? George W. was the son. George the first, what?
H, I think there was an H
and there's an W. How do they refer
to
him?
That's the second.
The George
that's
Sr.
That's why they called it W.
W, the distinguish between the son and the father. George Ben George. So it's unprecedented. It's unprecedented for a son to give, by the Goyim, a Melech, to give such honor. Baladon Ben Baladon. Could you imagine George W. would write, "I, President of the United States, George, the son of George."
Somebody was expecting him. Hitler, when he used to call up one of his generals when they were in the house, they stood at an attention as if he was right in front of them. They were so fearful of him, the aimer that they had from
the Yimach Shemai V'Zechariah. So the truth is that the same Yimach Shemai V'Zechariah you say about Hitler, you say about Nebuchadnezzar. The Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Hashem's Beis HaMikdash, and yet it's shocking, it is utterly shocking, that here in the Pasuk of Malachi, we want to give a dogma of Kavod, and a dogma of Avdus. What's the dogma? We can't find one of our own? We can't find one of members of Klal Yisrael giving Kavod, giving Yira? No! Chazal said, if you want a dogma of Kavod, It's Baladon ben Baladon. Who is Baladon? Nebuchadnezzar. That's the Pasuk Shah. Or Nebuchadnezzar's father and grandfather. It's the same family. That's a dogma of Kavod. You want to give an example of Yira? The Yira an Eved has for the master? Nebuzaradon, the servant of Nebuchadnezzar. You couldn't find a nice Jewish boy to use as an example of having fear for his Rosh Hashiva or for his master or a child for a father. It's pretty shocking that Chazal have to resort to go to these goyim, these wicked, thoroughly wicked people. These are murderers. These are the worst of the world. It doesn't get worse than this. And that's who we go to in order to give a dogma for kavod and yira. That's what it says over here. Now, Derech Agav, this is an incredible Chazal. If you would interview Gedolei Yisrael, there's no doubt about it. Today everything is watered down and things already are forgotten totally, and people have rewritten history. But it used to be years ago a very big debate by Gedolei Yisrael if it's proper to have Gedolim pictures. Is it a good thing to have Gedolim pictures? I remember Rabelsky, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, in his home, he had a massive, gorgeous portrait of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabelsky, he worshipped Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Mamish, he lived his whole life for Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Really, he had this. You walk into his home, you see this massive portrait. Obviously, he held from Gedolim pictures. And you walk, you know, it's a big business. It's a big business of a Yarmish. He used to come down and share his son. He's the biggest. Mendy Yarmish's son is probably one of the biggest collectors of Gedolim pictures. It's probably not a picture that he doesn't have. And then now maybe it's a little different because there are new people on the scene. And I remember in growing up in high school, even based in Medish, I remember there's a certain rebbeim that do not hold from this. They do not like it. They do not have in their home any Gedolim pictures.
They don't let themselves be taken.
They don't. That's a different issue. You want to have a picture taken of yourself, but they do not. They view it as avodah zara. They don't. They just. I don't know. I can't to define for you in words. A certain sensitivity. I know a certain rebbeim thinking about. They don't have in their home on the walls any Gedolim pictures. They have of their family, their children. They don't take pictures of Gedolim, put them on the wall.
Why not?
I don't know. You have to ask a psychologist. So very good, excellent. So yes, a very good question. There is something you lose. I think what the end. I once heard actually of Rabbi Ribner. There's a very big Talmud Chacham in Lakewood. His name is Rabbi Gershon Ribner. Actually, he's going to be speaking on Tisha B'Av this year. Tisha B'Av program, remember, Dr. Mandel's program, he's going to be one of the speakers. Gershon Ribner, he's a very, very big Baal Machshava. He probably is one of the biggest Baal Machshava of this generation, if I might say so. Every time I heard him speak, he always knocks me out. He always says, original creative ideas in Machshava. And I remember many years ago he spoke about, I told this to you in the shiur once, Sari Imenu, Avraham, he comes to Mitzrayim. He comes to Mitzrayim, and he then says to Sarah, he Now, how old is he at that point in time in his life? 75? 80? Whatever it is?
Yeah.
He's 80 years old. Oh, he ne no yodati. I just found out now that I have a beautiful wife. Oh, right now you first realize you have a beautiful. What were you doing the last 80 years? Who are you looking at? You never saw what your wife looked like? So Rashi said something shocking, which seems to indicate that he never saw what his wife looked like. That when you were traveling on the road, so you saw her reflection in a puddle, in a pool of water. What? You mean to say it was an accident? You happened to see her reflection in a puddle? And now is the first time you saw what your wife look like? All these years she's wearing a burqa? You never saw her? What's going on over here? Is this a model for Klal Yisrael, for us? You should never look at your wife? You never see what people look like? What's going on over here? It's a very, very difficult line of Chazal. So Rabbi Ribner, I remember this, and he explained this file. He basically says, of course he saw his wife. He saw his wife every second. The difference is, when you see someone for real, you see the whole person. You see them in motion. You see them doing meisim tovim, doing mitzvahs. You see them involved in life. There is a dimension that you cannot capture on a camera. When you see a picture of a person, it's a static image, it's an object. It's just an object of taiva, an object of you dwell on. This is an object of beauty, an object of a static image which you use to fill your lust. It's to satisfy yourself. Avraham Avinu did not have in his home wedding pictures. He didn't have wedding pictures in his home. He had his wife. I need a wedding picture? Why do I need a wedding picture on the buffet, on the wall of my wife when I see her right here? What do you need a wedding picture for? And when you see the person in life, alive, walking, talking, doing things, being oisik, entire mitzvahs, that is a dimension that captures a whole world, a whole different world. When you take that and you take a slice of time and you put it on a picture on the wall, you're not dealing with life. You're dealing with taiva, with yoifi, with the Yetzirah. Avraham Avinu, he only saw his wife active. When they were traveling, he saw her. He was just, I guess, maybe she was wherever they were, she was resting. And he saw an image of her in a puddle of water, a static image. He realized, when I look at my wife, I look at her as a person. The Egyptians, they're shotof and zima. They're blind. They don't look at a person's yir shemayim. They don't look at a person's ahavas Torah, chesed. They look at every single thing in this world as just an object of taiva. And when they're going to see her, they're blind. They're just going to see the picture of her, and they're going to use her, they're going to try to abduct her, kill me, and use her for their titles. So therefore, we now have to be careful. Of course, Avraham Avinu knew what his wife looked like. But Avraham Avinu did not have in his home pictures of his wife. When they come to Egypt, they're going to start taking pictures. The paparazzi is here. They're going to start taking pictures. Her picture is going to be plastered in all the newspapers. Oh, they're going to go crazy. They're all going to go crazy. Hashem prepared Avram for this by Hashem showing Avram, here's a picture of your wife. I know what your wife looks like life.
But as others see her.
As others, exactly.
What you're saying.
Because they're blind.
In the Abarbanel makes a very, very down-to-earth analogy, and this possible. I looked it up for a reason yesterday. But he says that Sarah was light-skinned, and when he got down to Egypt, and a lot of people look like Sarah. It's not that she stood out in her own place, but when he got down to Egypt and saw everybody was dark-skinned, and
she was
they
different.
Would look up to white people, so to speak. So you look at
America, you say this.
Oh, right. He said, now we're in trouble.
Racist.
Now everyone is going to want her because she looks very different than everyone.
Okay, that's a different approach. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now let me just say that. I'll give you an example.
It fits in with what he says about Moshe's wife.
You see what you want to see. I was reading yesterday a little clip about the Chofetz Chaim. Everyone saw that, a couple of years ago, it was discovered this footage of the Chofetz Chaim in Vienna in the year 1923, motion picture footage of the Chofetz Chaim coming to the Knesset HaGedola in Vienna. I think it was 1923. It was like 3-4 seconds of him walking, entering into this location. So they actually have, we finally got to see what he looks like, what the Chofetz Chaim looks like for real at this point in his life. because there were really no, there was one picture of him. That was when he was very, very old. That was right before he died. That one picture was literally very shortly before he passed away. And the other picture, everyone suspected, is it a real picture, not a real picture, this popular drawing of him, whatever it is. But, so they have a whole write-up. They have a whole write-up on him. They, at that time, when he came to the Knesset Gedolah, the Goyim were very interested in this gathering. Orthodox Jewry was the very first time in modern history where Jews got together. Something like this probably hasn't happened in hundreds, maybe even who knows, at least hundreds of years. Such a type of thing where Jews, Orthodox Jews, they all came together in one gathering. They had representatives of the Hulu of the Hulu. So the Goyim came, and there was a very elaborate write-up. And in the write-up, they described the majesty of the Chofetz Chaim. Incredible, it's very eloquent, very powerful. This goes from 1923. They describe in 1923 what the Chofetz Chaim looks like as he entered into the Ulam, into the hall of the Knesset Gedolah in Vienna. Very interesting. Okay, now put that aside. I remember reading this. This made a very strong impression upon me. I remember reading this more than once. There was a person here in America, here, I'm sure by now he passed away, Zoke, and he was talking to his grandchildren, he was telling him, I met the Chofetz Chaim. I knew the Chofetz Chaim. Obviously, this must take place years ago, and this person must have been obviously in the Zoke. He remembers the Chofetz Chaim. So the grandchild says to the Zaydin, no, what did he look like? Did he look like a Malach Elokim? Was his face glowing? If you come, when birds flew over his head, were they burnt? So the grandfather said that very powerful. I don't remember the exact words, but the words are to the effect of, if you did not know who he was, you wouldn't give him a second look. If you did not know that this man was the Chofetz Chaim, you would think he's a bus driver. Not only a bus driver, you would think he's, I don't know, he's anything. He's a janitor, he's a bus driver, he's a college professor, he's a plumber, he's a regular old man who comes to shul, sits down in shul, puts on his tefillin, takes off his tefillin, goes home, takes a cup of coffee. If you wouldn't know who he was, you would not give him a second look. Regular old man, run of the mill. But if you knew who he was, and you watched him, every tenuah, every motion he made was filled with Yirah Shamayim, with Chochmah, Ahavas Hashem, Ahavas HaTorah, Ahavas Yisrael. You had to know what to look for. You had to know what to look for. You didn't know? Who is he? You're just sitting here in this room. Big deal. Big deal. I think you told me the thing about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You go to Chabad. You go in the early years before it became, everything became, a celebrity center. But when the Chabad was just Chabad, when they first started.
I have to say, when the Rebbe was young, he had a tzura. He always had a tzura.
He had it. Okay. But
not, something different. There's something
different. Okay. So maybe some people are different. But this is what he said about the Chofetz Chaim, and it's so true. People, great people, if you didn't know, when you know who you're looking at and you watch for 1 minute, wow, you're blown away. I told you another story about this, about a certain rabbi, a certain person who came to Eretz Yisrael to his Litvisha Rosh Hashiva. And he told the Litvisha Rosh Hashiva, I'm going tonight, whether you like it or not, I'm going to a chassidah, to a tish, from a groyser rebbe. I'm going to the competition tonight. I'm going to the competition. I hear you here. You're my Rosh Hashiva. You're a Litvak. I know you don't get along with the chassidah. I'm going tonight to a tish, one of the biggest rebbes in Eretz Yisrael. So he goes to the tish. He comes back the next day. So the Rosh Hashiva says, Nunu, tell me, what did you see? Did you see anything special? So he says to the Rosh Hashiva, I saw something very interesting. What did you see? So he says, I saw that when they gave the Rebbe soup, so the Rebbe, he took the spoon and he brought the soup all the way up to his mouth. And he put the spoon into his mouth and he sipped the soup. The Rebbe did not bend to the soup. Everyone else, when you have soup, when you have soup, you bend a little bit, right? You bend to the soup. You don't lift the spoon all the way up to your mouth. When you eat a piece of challah, you sit and you put the challah in your mouth. You eat a piece of meat, you sit, you take the fork, you put it in your mouth. But when you eat, when you take soup, when you sip soup, that's not the way we do things. The way we think we do things is we bend. You take the spoon and you bend a little bit, some a little bit more, some a little bit less. So this Talmud of this Rosh Hashiva says, I saw at the Tish. So you think, what did you see at the Tish? Tell me about this Torah. Tell me about the Zemirois. Tell me about how the Hasidim give kavod. Tell me how they were pushing and shoving and they were committing crimes. Tell me all the gossip. What did you see at the Tish? I saw that when the Rebbe, this is all he had to say. I saw the Rebbe, he didn't bend. I saw he brought the soup to his mouth. So whoever this Rosh Hashiva was, he smiled and he says, you saw something very great. I don't know the exact words. And it's amazing that you saw this. See, everybody says, I'm almost certain no one else saw this. All the Hasidim sitting around there, they didn't see this. You're my Talmud. That's godless. That's greatness. That's greatness. Who's the balabas? The food or you? Who's in charge here? Who's in charge here? The food, the taiva? The food is the taiva. I gotta eat. You bend. You bend yourself to the food. Is that or is the I'm the balabas. Adam, discipline. Cover to Adam. You're my Talmud. See, I trained you well. You saw something. No one else. What do you mean they didn't see? They were looking at the Rebbe. They were looking right at him. How come they didn't see this? They're not trained to see this. They're not trained to see godless. Same thing when it came to the Chofetz Chaim. If you didn't know who he was, who is he? Just a balabas. Oh, you know who he is. Every little thing that he did is unbelievable. Sara Imenu. If you know who she is, wow. You have the schus to be in her Dalet Amos. Egyptians, shetufe zima. They don't see anything. All they see is a picture of a beautiful woman. That's all they see. They don't see anything. Avraham Avinu, he knew what his wife looks like, but he didn't see the gashmias, the tithe, the lust. He didn't see that because that's not what he's looking at. He's looking at Sari Meinu as the person. He looks right at her face, right in her eyes. No burkas, no mechitzas. He looked right at her. But what Avraham Avinu see? Her greatness. The Egyptians, they're blind. They're literally blind. They don't see the person. They just see, a beautiful woman. They see a picture.
That's why you have to see a reflection.
Exactly, that's what Rav Ribner says. Exactly. That is why the Hashgacha practice, he's 80 years old. He never saw his wife before. Hashem, the Hashgacha practice, allowed him to see a reflection. In other words, to see a picture of her. I guess she was sitting still. She wasn't doing anything. She was resting. And he saw a babua. That's basically a picture. Oh, that's what she looks like. For them? Uh-oh, we're in trouble here. Now, going back to Gedolim pictures, I think that answers the question. Mordechai, you asked the question, why wouldn't you want to have a Gedolim pictures? Why wouldn't you want to have Gedolim pictures? It takes away who they really are. It really does. It takes away. You look at a picture of a person, is that how you remember them? Is that really how you remember them? Yes and no. I mean, to some today with photography and photoshopping, they do an amazing job.
You never had personal
they
contact.
Make it. Then actually, sometimes they make it usually a lot better than it really is. Okay, it's not a kleinigkeit. Okay, I remember hearing from someone. I remember reading that when art school and Meir Zlatowitz, when they would publish the Gedolim, the biographies, one of the hardest things was the cover, was the image. The image they put of the Gadol on the cover. You know, that, like he said, anyone who said that don't judge a book by its cover, never try to sell a book. But I have no doubt in my mind that wasn't the only issue. they write this up that when they Reb Meir's Lateritz, he published the Gedoyim books, the biographies. I don't know the biographies. He doesn't like that. They're not really really books of inspiration about Gedoyim. Because if you want to write a biography, write about this. He's very clear, Meir Lateritz. We're not, even though it says in the book biography, I don't know what he means, but he says we're not publishing biographies. Get that out of your mind. This is not a biography. We're not here to go tell you all the Lashon Hara and the garbage and the nonsense. This is not a biography with the standards of the world. These are books of inspiration. We're selecting isolated events in their life which we feel people can learn from, they can grow from. Some of them are more pleasant, some are less pleasant, but we're not writing an all-encompassing biography because it's no one's business. It's not your business to know what goes on in a person's personal life. The whole Klal Yisrael, you have to know everything. By the Goyim, you have to know. George Washington, you have to know what he ate for breakfast every single day. You have to know what kind of underwear he wore. It's no one's business when it comes to the Daily Yisrael. What? It's no one's business. The books of inspiration. But one thing that really bothered him is the picture. The image of the Gadol, does it do him justice? Does it really capture? Because the MS is, a picture never does you justice. A picture is a picture. It's a static image of a person. It's not, it takes away. It definitely, so what's the solution? Okay, no picture. Then you have nothing. You don't even remember you had a Rebbe. So where's the balance? You don't live in a perfect world. Where's the balance? If you have a picture, you're going to take away to a degree. If you don't have a picture, also people change. The picture you're showing, that's one tekufa of his life. When he was younger, it was a different tekufa. The different tekufa. There's so many tekufas people go through every day. It's a whole new world. There are different times in the person's life. You can't go compare one picture to another picture. So a picture, it's just a slice. It's a teeny slice. It does damage. It's collateral damage. What's the alternative? No picture. That can be even worse. It's even worse. So the Minigoyal Abyss, pictures. We have pictures. Everyone, 99% of the population today, especially. Adrabba, the very go into yeshiva and see, my day didn't have this. When I was in Yeshiva Katana, you walk into a Yeshiva Katana in my day, and I was MTJ in Chaimelin, there wasn't one picture of a Gadol anywhere in the building. Nowhere. Now I walk into Chaimelin. The whole, wherever you walk in the building, big building, all over the place, massive size pictures of everyone under the sun. The Sakhmirov, of Moshe Feinstein, of Yaakov Kamenetsky, the Alpha from Slobodka, this one, you name it. No discrimination.
Rav Cook
not. Even though Rav Putna had Rav Cook in the sukkah. It's not, they don't have Rav Cook.
And someone else also.
They used to have, I don't know what happened, they used to have in the office, coming to the office, not even the office, in the waiting room, you walk into the building, this massive portrait of Rabbi Chaim Berlin himself. I don't know, it's not there anymore. Maybe it's from the steel, they took it, I don't know, this massive portrait disappeared, I don't know where they put it, it's not there anymore. But a picture, on the one hand, it doesn't do justice. On the other hand, you can't do that a picture. So here you have an incredible Maamar Chazal, which basically presents to you both sides of the coin. Mamish, that's what it says over here. It says over here, you have an Rachmana Litzlav, who we have to come on to? We have to come on to Nevuzaradon, then the servant of Nevuchadnezzar. Pretty scary, right? That's what we need to come on to learn from. That's what today you would say something like this, it would throw you out into the street. But it says it over here in Chazal. Article put on the bottom of the page. This is the Chazal. It says we have a contradiction. Nevuzaradon. It says in one place stood before Nevuchadnezzar. He stood before him. And it says in another pasuk that Nevuchadnezzar wouldn't dare come to Yerushalayim because he was terrified. He was traumatized. He was in Antiochia. Okay, he came to Antiochia. He was in Rivlasi. He wouldn't want to go there. How do you reconcile two answers? One answer is Gedolim pictures. He had a picture and it's wow. I remember there was a person, the Chaim used to say brachos every single morning. So we always take out of his, on the front page of the Siddur, he showed me, opened up the front cover, was Rav Shloimeh Hyman, his Rebbe. Rav Shloimeh Hyman. on a sitter a picture of his Rebbe from Torah Vadas. He lived his whole life with his Rebbe Yerushalmi Haim. Mr. Weiss. Mr. Weiss, Baruch Hashem, he's okay. He used to come to Shul here all the years. So he takes out of his wallet Rav Shurkin. Always take out of his wallet, show me the picture of Rav Shurkin. People live, that's answer number one. He had a picture. Answer number two, he had no picture. No picture, Chas v'Shalom. The Diyus, the Yuknoi, the image of Nebuchadnezzar was right in front of him. He was brainwashed. He lived every breath he took, he saw in front of him the master, Nebuchadnezzar. So
we find the same thing by Yosef the Tzaddik.
The most Yigneshlovin. The most Yigneshlovin appeared by Asia's Fatifah. As without the Minichshal, the Demus, the Yuknoi, Shal Aviv, Nira Elov. The image. So what does that mean exactly? It means in your mind. Hashem Shad, in your mind. You hear that the different people, well, they say that they live their whole life with the image of their Rebbe, their master before them. You don't need to go, don't give me pictures. You can give me a picture, you're gonna destroy the image, the powerful image that I have in my mind. And it's right here in this Chazal. Yeah, we have the two different answers to explain what it means that he stood before him. The image was etched into his Merkava, or no image. I see him before me. Seeing him before you is
going to be. But the Goyim is a different thing. With the Goyim, the aim was that they'll get killed if he looks at him the wrong way.
I'm not so sure. You see, by the Goyim, there are people who worship their fans. There are certain people. Elvis took about a crazy example. People didn't worship him, they're afraid of him. There's a certain year when Elvis enters the room. Okay, when a president, someone who you worship. It's not only because you're afraid for your life. It's not, obviously, when you're afraid for your life, you're going to tzitter. But there's hero worship. Nebuchadnezzar. I don't think that Nebuchadnezzar, his years haroimimus, was because he was afraid that Nebuchadnezzar would kill him in 1 second. I don't think Nebuchadnezzar would want to take a person to be a general who behaved like that. If you were a general, and you would want to go appoint cabinet officers, you want people that are afraid for their life. When they're not watching, they'll kill you. They'll stab you in the back. You want to take a person that has for you awe. Yiras haroimimus. It's a whole different type of loyalty.
Yes.
Okay. Loyalty. The nafka mina is loyalty. When you're down and out, who are your real people? Okay. Everyone knows how the with Trump. Trump. There's a clip going around from the 80s. When he had a lot of different color hair, when he was a lot, lot younger, he said this real crazy, creepy thing that some, he says, I said, you know what I want to do one day? I want to give it all up. I want to make believe that I have nothing. And then I'll be able to see who's really loyal to me. Who's really loyal to me?
Who's my friend?
And it was a fascinating insight into the human condition. When the very end of his presidency, when he was down and out, and when the whole thing happened in the Capitol on the sixth, and it was very, very, very fascinating to look and to see the people that were very close to him all these years, how they behaved. He was really down and out. And it's an insight into the human condition. People who supposedly were, who are his inner circle. There's inner circle. How did they behave? Very interesting. And we all know in our own lives, you have these situations when people that we're very close to, when they're in a lot of trouble, do you run away? I don't want to be associated with this person. He committed a crime. He's guilty. He's ugly. I don't want it to be associated. On the other hand, listen, he's your family. He's your friend. New, so you'll take some flack. Are you committed to your friend? He needs your help. He needs someone. New, it's gonna rub off on you. You're gonna go down with a bad reputation that you're part of his chevra. I didn't commit the crime. He committed the crime. He needs my help. No, people are going to say, oh, it goes to show you have bad friends. No, you have to make decisions. You know, when your inner circle is a very painful experience, these type of situations. But I'm assuming it's not because he was just afraid for his life. It's like a Machol said, it's hero worship. There is awe, loyalty. Okay, we finish this Chazal, we'll continue right into the break, and then we're going to continue with the Kinois.
Chaim
Eiser.
And also the Rabbi Zriel Hildesheim. We have the span. And there's a spark in the
I wanted to listen to the shift today.
I haven't put anything up online in a very long time.
No, because I haven't looked for it. But I'm saying because we didn't talk for a number of times. It's a great lumping or something like that. If you do. But I'm saying we did work a number of times already, right? So how would you...
I put down numbers. Okay, I'll show you later.
That's why I showed you before where the... Because, let me ask another question, please. I see over here, some like coffee cup, it's cups over there.
Yeah, so take
it. Is that yours? I don't know.
I'll put one here by you
so make sure you get one.
I
know, but I'm saying if you want to get...
Today is my father's yard sign. 25 years.
25 years old, Shlomo, what's his name?
Yehuda Tzvi Moshe. I see Moshe, because he died while I was holding his hand. I see for many years, that's what I, when I close my eyes at night as a kid, and when I close my eyes at night, that's whose face I saw. Every night for maybe, I don't know, so many years, it never left me. Still occasionally it happens. I close my eyes at night, that's the first thing I see.
Private stock.
All right. So, because there were a lot of rebbeim around. He was Rosh Hashiva, but I respected him certainly, but I didn't think of him as such as a god. But I remember always saying to my father, he always looked like he just got out of the sunlight. His face, he looked like he just got a golden tan. His face, literally, he Koran Ar Pnei Moshe. It was so real. It was frightening. He had a glow up on his face. He was bald head, and his face always was so...
Put out a few.
I made a suggestion. Maybe
put
just
them all out. Don't
put them
out.
All out.
Put them all out. Put them all out. Don't want that.
His face had a red glow. He just did. And I used to say to my father, it's incredible. He looked like he fell asleep under a sun lamp all the time. So I don't know, but that's the way it looked. He's the ear seeing.
Even Morse had a catheter and water. When I was a kid and I didn't think that because I saw her every day, I was used to seeing the doctor together, working with her.
Laser, when are you coming back?
He was like,
that's the way you look.
Okay, Rabbi, so let's learn. We have only 2 days left until we'll... Okay, Rabbi, Heshi, how are you feeling? Heshi Barth, how are you feeling?
The nurse has doing stuff there, Rabbi.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer you right away.
Okay, no problem, okay.
The nurse in the background, I think they want to walk around.
One who comes over here. Heshi Barth. Okay, Rabbi, so let's begin. Okay, we are up to Kinovov. We've gone through very briefly. One second.